Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Tuesday, April 9th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. A Hoonah man convicted of murdering two police officers will spend the rest of his life in prison. A judge sentenced 47-year-old John Marvin Jr. to 198 years behind bars for gunning down two Hoonah officers in front of their families and then holding other officers at bay in a standoff. Matt Miller reports from Juneau.
Superior Court Judge David George called Marvin a dangerous individual during a hearing on Friday morning.
The offense was committed deliberately. It was motivated by a perception of need to exact revenge. It was executed without any immediately preceding, precipitating event. This was not in anger.
Marvin was convicted during a jury trial in November of the murder of Hoonah Police Sergeant Tony Wallace and Officer Matthew Tokaoka. They were gunned down as they socialized with family members on Front Street in Hoonah, August 28th of 2010. Tokaoka's widow Haley says their family had spent that day fishing. What was the best day of their lives had turned into the worst day of their lives.
I never thought I would be a widow with two small children at the age of 32. But the most disturbing thing to me is how could and why did John Marvin do this in front of a mother, wife, and especially two small children, the bullet just inches away from them.
She suggested that it was revenge for an incident a year earlier when Marvin was arrested by officers. Debbie Green, mother of Wallace, listened to the sentencing hearing from her home in Louisiana. She also wanted to know why. Haley Tokaoka read her prepared statement to the court.
It is not for me to judge you, and I forgive you as God has forgiven me of my sins, because that is what God teaches us. I can forgive, but I will never, never forget that night of August 28th when you completely destroyed my life. My God has mercy on your soul.
Marvin's 99-year sentence for the murder of Wallace while serving as an officer in the performance of his duty is specified in statute and does not allow for parole. But the judge had discretion in a range between 20 and 99 years for the murder of Tokaoka, who was off duty at the time. The judge imposed the maximum 99 years. Judge George cited the need for deterrence and Marvin's isolation as he ordered that both sentences be served consecutively. Marvin also made his own comments to the court in a 15-minute, largely rambling and incoherent monologue about the case's proceedings being out of order and other issues. Reporting in Juneau, I'm Matt Miller.
The Southeast Alaska king salmon quota is down again for the second year in a row. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced last week that the allowable harvest will be 176,000 kings for all gear types, commercial and sport. That's 90,000 fewer fish than last year, which was down about 30,000 from the year before. The quota is based on a combined forecast of U.S. and Canadian Chinook runs managed under the Pacific Salmon Treaty. According to Alaska Deputy Fish and Game Commissioner Dave Bedford, those populations are down again. That's with the exception of the Columbia River, where there's a different issue.
The return to the Columbia is going to be large, but a very substantial and abnormally a large part of that run is going to be three-year-old fish, and three-year-old fish aren't 28 inches long, so we can't catch them. So there's a bunch of them, but they don't really count towards abundance in our fishery. So then to boil it down, what you have is, say, let's say seven stock groups that are the principal contributors to the fishery in Southeast Alaska, and six out of those seven are running below average this year. And the one that's above average is producing a bunch of fish that aren't harvestable for us.
Alaska's commercial trawlers and sport anglers are not allowed to keep king salmon less than 28 inches long. Southeast last saw lower king levels than this in 2008. Since then, the quota peaked in 2011. The king decline has been a statewide trend in recent years. Poor returns to the Yukon, Kuskokwim, and Cook Inlet areas prompted a federal disaster declaration last year. Bedford notes that Governor Sean Parnell and Fish and Game Commissioner Cora Campbell have asked legislature for substantial funding to boost king salmon research and management.
We're seeing reduced productivity in a lot of areas in Alaska, and that holds true for some areas in the southeast as well, and it appears to be holding true for some areas to the south of 5440 as well. So there's something going on. out in the ocean, and I know because I'm a policy guy, I can get away with really precise precision statements like that. But in any event, so I mean, I can't really comment, and frankly, nobody at this point can comment with any real substance to what that is. But productivity for Chinook is on a downward trend at this particular point, and so we're seeing that reflected here as we are elsewhere in the state.
On the fishing grounds, a smaller quota generally translates to less fishing opportunity. That usually means less time for commercial fishermen to target Chinook and reduce bag limits for sport anglers. The children's author Ruxana Khan was in Sitka last week. She visited schools across the state as part of the Alaska Spirit of Reading program, where students read an assigned book and then get to meet the author as he or she tours the state. The program is run by Sitka School librarians. Khan was born in Pakistan and grew up in Canada. Her books include The Big Red Lollipop, which was named by the New York Times as one of the top 10 illustrated books of 2010. Her new book and the one assigned as part of the program is called Wanting More. It tells the story of a girl in Afghanistan whose mother dies in the war and whose father abandons her. During presentations at Blatchley Middle School last Tuesday, Khan talked about the themes of the book, but also her own upbringing in Canada. She's Muslim and says her visits to schools give people a chance to learn about more than her books.
The biggest reason I love doing this so much is because I think it's a bit of outreach. Right now, especially after September 11th, people think Muslims are crazy. And if I can change their minds a little bit, if I can open the door and show them, hey, you know, we've got some pretty good stories, and we're really not like that. We're not, and really the vast majority of Muslims, we're not crazy like bin Laden, okay? We would never do something like that. You know, we're just peaceful, law-abiding people, you know, and we have funny stories, we have sad stories, and I really try to use stories to build bridges of understanding. That's what I try to do.
After her presentation to a sixth grade class, she sat down in the Blatchley Library for an interview with students Kaya Gleason and Joey Bidet.
Well, what inspires you to write your stories? Like, where do you get the ideas?
Oh, that'll take me like an hour. all kinds of things inspire me. I think a lot of the time I write stories that where I'm trying to figure certain things out. When I was writing Wanting More, it's about a girl. It's based on a true story. It's about a girl in Afghanistan whose mother dies during the war. Her father gets remarried. The stepmother doesn't want her, so the father takes her to the marketplace and he leaves her there. I just wanted to find out how this girl will survive. What would that be like, having your father abandon you like that? You know, I'm so glad that my father never did that. He never did. He was pretty harsh. He used to hit us and stuff like that, but he never did that. And it really made me look at my father in a different way. So things that I'm kind of going through, that I'm learning, that I'm dealing with, often those things will work their way into the writing that I do. So, and basically, I'm still curious. You know, like when I was a kid, I'm curious. I want to figure out the world. I'm trying to learn something every day. And a lot of the time, I put the stuff that I'm learning into the books that I'm writing, you know, because I want to be able to read them. I want to like the books. And if I like them, then chances are other people will like them.
What was your favorite book as a child?
Oh, I have so many. I think one of my, okay, I know which one is. Mara, Daughter of the Nile. Mara, Daughter of the Nile is like a spy thriller novel set in ancient Egypt. Okay, and Mara was like this Egyptian girl. She was so cool. And this guy in there, his name was Cheftu, and there was a kiss in there, and it was just like, oh my gosh, I love Cheftu so much. I had such a crush on Cheftu. And I loved that book so much, and I was really poor. I did not know you could buy books when I was growing up. I thought you could only get them from the library. And one day I actually stole it from the library. Oh, I shouldn't say that because the library is right over there. But I stole it from the library. I loved it so much. I kept taking it out, And finally I just kind of stuck it in my jacket. And the librarian said, well, you know, you have to return it. I said, I already returned it. And so she believed me and she just, you know, think. And for a whole month, I kept that book under my mattress. And I felt so guilty. And finally I thought, oh, I got to take it back. So I went and I put in my coat and I went and I put it back on the shelf. And then when I went back to take it out again, it was gone because I think it was all like raggedy and the librarian must have thrown it out. And I thought, oh, I couldn't find it. When I grew up, I saw it in a bookstore And I bought all 5 copies. And one day, I have 3 daughters, right? And my daughter was probably about 14 at the time. And she read Mara. I gave it to her to read. One day she came up to me and she said, "Oh, Mom, I'm in love." And I said, What? Who are you in love with? And she goes, "With Chef too." And I started laughing. I said, yeah, I get it. I said I was in love with him too. He was just so cool. Oh, he was so cool. You got to read that. That one's just a fantastic, fantastic story. Oh, my gosh. It's so good.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Merg, you're welcome. Good questions. I thought they were really nice questions.
That's the children's author Roxana Khan during a visit to Sitka last week. She was interviewed by Blatchley Middle School students Kaya Gleason and Joey Bedad. You can link to Khan's blog on our website, kcaw.org. The Alaska legislature has rejected another term for Board of Fisheries member. Vince Webster had served on the board since 2007. In recent days, the Kenai River Sport Fishing Association put out a call to action against Webster, saying in part that the failure of a task force on Cook Inlet King Salmon rested largely with him. Governor Sean Parnell's chief of staff, Mike Nitzich, emailed legislators Sunday, saying he was aware of efforts to unfairly characterize Webster's work. He asked that the lawmakers call Webster to give him a chance to respond to the allegations before voting. Webster's confirmation was defeated on a 30-29 vote. Parnell, in a statement, said it was disappointing, discouraging, and disheartening when bad information or politics prevent a qualified Alaskan from serving the state. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or would like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. Now a look at Sitka's own weather. Today, wind rainy, heavy at times in the morning, then rain showers in the afternoon. Highs around 45, south wind 20-30 miles per hour with gusts to 45 miles per hour. KCAW, Sitka.